welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. Thanks for joining me tonight and spending your valuable time with me and my wonderful guests. I hope you like the opening song, Maria, by that band from across the pond we call the Atlantic Ocean. They're called Be Optimistic. Well, maybe you've noticed. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. That's how Gandhi put it. I think another way to put it is to call ourselves the cognitive minority, the ones ahead of the curve in thinking. You know, like the scientists that were telling the anti-intellectual church that the world wasn't flat and the sun didn't revolve around the earth. The battle through the thick brush with our pink-handled machetes until we clear the thinking of the rest, giving them time to catch up. Yes, that's our battle. Those of us here on Voices of the Sacred Feminine know goddess ideals, her archetypes, Mother Earth, offer us a template for living and creating a sustainable, bountiful, joyous, peaceful, equal future. We just have to be her sacred roar, spur that evolution to help the others catch up. Yes, we're called the cognitive minority, the folks that are ahead of the curve in thinking, the folks who have to blaze the trail, like I said, with our pink-handled machetes, waiting for the rest to catch up. Well, if you're new to the show, I'm your hostess, Karen Tate, and I'm the author of two acclaimed books, Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations. It's sold in all the usual places, but also in museum bookstores like the Getty in Malibu and the Chicago Field Museum, maybe because there's no other book like it out there. And my other book is Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, which won an award in the spirituality category in the USA National Best Books. A spiritual, socio-political look at embracing a goddess-inspired life. That's sort of what I describe it as. Whether you're learning about the living traditions of goddess spirituality around the world, traveling to her sacred sites, or just want to know why the sacred feminine is still relevant today as a deity, an archetype, or ideal. Ideals like women's rights, environmentalism, fairness, balance, partnership, wisdom and truth, equality, nurturing and caring, women's spiritual authority and leadership, which is sorely lacking in our dominator culture and patriarchal world. I know you've heard me say it before, but it's so important to keep saying it, keep saying it, keep saying it, fighting for it. And that provides us with a great segue for me to share with you some excerpts from Starhawk's blog. You can find it for yourself at starhawk.org. I encourage you to go there and share it with your friends. And if you don't know Starhawk, she's an internationally known pagan elder, goddess advocate, and activist that's been fighting the good fight for goddess ideals and Mother Earth for decades. You can hear my interviews with her in the archives. In her blog that she has up right now, she has a topic, Elections 2012. She's talking to us about the upcoming election and the importance of voting and not wasting a vote for a third party. I hope if you fall into one of those categories, thinking of not voting or thinking of voting for a third party, or maybe you're even thinking about voting a Republican, although I don't think Republicans listen to my show, I hope you'll take a minute to hear what this wise leader, the mentor of so many, has to say. Anyway, she starts out her blog talking about a girl by the name of Shauna that she was trying to persuade to vote. She said her discussion took place long before the election and the current crop of propositions wasn't yet on the ballot. But she says, were she able to talk to her today, here's some ways that voting on the issues just here in California might make a difference to her life. She'd tell Shauna that Prop 30 would raise money for better public schools. Defeating Prop 32 would keep the Koch brothers and the corporate power mongers from effectively excluding the unions and the candidates who backed the interests of working people from political power. Prop 34 would end the death penalty in California, which inordinately affects people of color. Prop 36 would reform our horrific three-strikes, you're out, another issue that is of deep concern to communities of color who are targeted for prisons. Right now, a person who's charged with even a nonviolent offense or a petty crime can go to jail for life with no judicial discretion. The reform would make it so that offenses need to be serious, violent ones, and dramatically reduce the chance that Shauna or her friends would spend a lifetime in prison for some stupid shit they do to be cool at 19. Prop 37 would require labeling of genetically modified foods, giving us all an informed choice about what we eat and ending the free ride Monsanto and the GMO-producing companies have gotten to inflict their unwanted, unsafe, and damaging products on the unknowing public. We're going to talk more about that in just a bit. And that's just the propositions. Starhawk says, what about voting for president? She goes on to say, it's true, neither Obama nor Romney espouse my personal ideals nor champion some of my most important issues, but there are many, many ways in which an Obama victory would make life better for Shauna and for me, and for me too. Shauna doesn't want to get pregnant like so many of her girlfriends have done. Obama and the Democrats stand strong for women's reproductive freedom, for making contraceptives available and part of insured health plans, and for protecting a woman's right to choose. Romney and his cronies have promised to make abortion illegal. Some of them have stated in all circumstances, even rape, because they claim a woman can't get pregnant if the rape is legitimate. Or when the woman's life is in danger, they claim it's never in danger from pregnancy. The next president will likely appoint two Supreme Court justices, which will have a huge impact on protecting Roe versus Wade and many other issues for decades to come. Well, Shauna was thinking of enlisting in the military. For her, that seems like the best option for some sort of a future. And while Obama is no pacifist and continues to support a drone program, Starhawk says she finds immoral and unconscionable. He did get us out of Iraq. He's moving us out of Afghanistan more slowly than she'd like, but at least he's moving us in the right direction. Romney, on the other hand, objects to a timetable to get out of Afghanistan and is highly likely to get his warmongering advisors to let his warmongering advisors get us into a whole new war with Iran. Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, is closest to my ideal, Starhawk says, but has no potential to actually win. And if by some miracle she did, she'd have no party backing in Congress, no experience, and no clout. In the Bayview, where Starhawk lives, when there's money for summer jobs and training, the murder rate goes down. When the money dries up, the murder rate climbs. Obama's stimulus resulted in lots of jobs during the summer for Shauna and her friends, therefore fewer deaths. Unlike Romney, the chances of any money for improving the lives of Shauna and her friends are as likely as my becoming a champion girl jockey and winning the Kentucky Derby. Under Obama, Starhawk goes on, especially if we could get the obstructionist Republicans out of the way, we'd see more resources and more hope. And then there's health care. Under Romney, Shauna's best hope of getting health care would be to go on welfare and qualify for Medicaid or succumb to the forces driving young people from her hood into prison. As for me, a self-employed writer closing in on the age where I could soon qualify for Medicare, health insurance remains my single largest expense, more than my house payments, more than food. And that's after dropping down to a minimal policy. Obamacare is not the single-payer system I prefer and which would make most moral and fiscal sense, but it's a hell of a lot better than what we've got now, especially for someone who is not part of some big corporation that helps pay for insurance. And should Romney get in and turn Medicare into a private voucher system, it would have a devastating effect on my chances of avoiding a destitute old age. Well, Starhawk goes on, and I'm not going to keep reading from her blog. I invite you to go there, starhawk.org, and read it for yourself. But obviously, as I do, she is endorsing Obama for president. You know, people have said to me, Karen, how can you come out and take a side? You might offend people. They might not buy your books or take your classes or listen to your show. And I say, you know what? I have to stand for something. I have to clearly stand with the values of the sacred feminine wherever they are, with whomever is most closely aligned with those ideals. I have to be pragmatic and practical, and I'm not going to put my purse strings ahead of my integrity. This is what being her sacred ruler means. So just like other ministers out there, like Martin Luther King, like the nuns on the bus going across the country teaching about the immorality of the Ryan Romney budget, I add my voice to what's right, not necessarily what's most beneficial to me. Like me or not, you'll know where I stand and what I stand for and with. Well, tonight I have more super guests for you. Opening the show, we have Pam Larry, who's going to tell us about GMOs and Prop 37. And GMOs, in case you haven't, I don't know, I hate to say it, but in case you've been living under a rock someplace, GMOs means genetically modified organisms, otherwise known as our genetically modified food. I know this is a big deal out here in California, maybe not so much in other parts of the country, so I wanted to just make sure you knew what those letters stood for. This issue might be looming larger here in California, but as we know, as California goes, so often, so goes the rest of the country. So we really need to win Proposition 37, I believe is what Pam is going to tell us. Those propositions get so confusing because the way they word it, you know, they make some of them sound like it's a really good thing when it's really not. Then as we cross the threshold into the latter part of the show takes a slight detour from the usual. And we have Al Sylvester with us. He's been studying alchemy for decades, and he's going to share with us what he believes Genesis, Jesus, Osiris, and pagans, and the people of nature have to do with alchemy. He also contends Jesus was not only a pagan, but an alchemist. We'll hear what he has to say about all that. I think it's fascinating. Alchemy has always been a subject I find provocative. I think we've lost a lot of ancient knowledge thanks to the Dark Ages when the pagans were rooted out by, well, you know who. But first, a few quick, very quick housekeeping tips, and then we're going to be talking to Pam. I want to thank you all for your listener loyalty. If you haven't already heard, according to the stats, listener downloads and listens have quadrupled since the spring, doubled since just last month. You must be liking what you're hearing, but remember, please continue to send your feedback about the show. I like hearing what you think. You can email me here. From my blog talk show page or directly to my email address, which is KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. And also, I have to give a big shout-out to Melissa G., who sent in an awesome donation to help me keep Voices of the Sacred Feminine on the air. As Goddess teaches us, what we nurture and support, it thrives. What we neglect, it withers. So thank you again, Melissa G. And also, please try to remember the two F's. Click the follow button so you get news of who I have on the show each week without having to rely on getting a reminder email from me. And please, I invite you to click on friend and become a friend of the show, because becoming a that way you can become a part of the International Voices of the Sacred Feminine family. Of the trees, bears your fairy flesh of wildness, wonder, magic, mirth, and love. Your beauty seals our bridal with all life. The dance of your green pulse unfolds all souls, all bodies, and all blessings from earth's fragrant form. That's a prayer from the group Feriferia, whose name means celebrate wildness. It was Feriferia that inspired Jo Carson to make her documentary film, Dancing with Gaia. Jo traveled the earth and interviewed 15 visionaries about connections between the goddess, sacred sexuality, and opening to earth's spirit. The film also gives you a close-up experience of some of the most powerful sacred sites in the Western world. The DVD comes packaged with a useful booklet which expands on the techniques of the film. You would have the package for only $20 from dancingwithgaia.com. Really might want to think about that, listeners. I've seen the DVD. It's really pretty cool. The holidays are coming, and if you're looking for something different to give a friend, that just might be it. Well, let's see what's next here. I think I want to remind you that you can catch any of our shows from the archives. You can also call in and talk to me or my guest. You call in 718-766-4662. When I get to a natural stopping point in the conversation, I'll take your calls. So, but without further delay, let me tell you a bit more about my first guest, Pam Larry, and I also want to thank her for her patience until we could get to her and welcome her on the show. Pam is a 56-year-old grandmother from Chico, California, who literally woke up on January 20th, 2011, and knew it was her job from that day until November 6th, Election Day, to do everything she could do to get genetically engineered food labeling on the ballot, then won in the state of California. She believes in our right to know what we're buying and feeding our kids. That should supersede corporate rights and non-transparent profit. If you want to know more about what she's doing, there's a website. I'll spell it. California Right to Know, carighttoknow.org. So, Pam, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm Karen. Really
Pam, you're breaking up a little bit there. Are you?
I'm sitting still. Is that better?
Yes, that's better.
Okay, great. Okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your patience. I know my intro was a little bit longer than usual tonight, but it sort of segued into our topic because, you know, as we know, Starhawk is a big advocate for permaculture and, you know, all things, you know, that are about, you know, positive for Gaia and Mother Nature, which you are too. You're supporting Prop 37 on the California ballot, aren't you?
Yeah. I actually started this, so yeah, I'm supporting it for sure. What's really exciting, what I'm excited about being on the show is that this is primarily a woman-run initiative. It was begun by a woman, grandmother, and a mother. Most of the people that have came on board early to build the grassroots movement that started this are women. We have leaders all throughout the state organizing their communities. About 85% are women, and many of them come to this from a deeply spiritual place. They care about the planet. They care about the food. They care about the health and welfare of the children and all living beings. And so I have an open invitation for women to join us. In fact, I even have a video where I call on the grandmothers
okay.
to rise up. Anyway, I also wanted to introduce Kat, who is also one of the women
let me unmute Kat.
Okay.
Hey, Kat, you with us now?
I am.
Great. Well, welcome, Kat. First of all, let me go back just one or two steps here. Pam, I didn't realize that you were the one that actually started this. Major
yes.
kudos to you. What an incredible journey this must have been. Did you know anything about doing stuff like this before you started?
No, I had no idea. It was a calling for sure. But I had no clue how to do it, how to do a ballot initiative. I had no money. I had no experience. I had very few contacts. I just felt very, very called. It was born out of a deep depression about what was going on with this topic, about how, you know, corporations were colluding with government and feeling very powerless, I mean, you know, and very hopeless. And got pretty catatonic. Then when I had this, Jeffrey Smith, who's one of the authors in this, he calls it my epiphany, on January 20th of last year, my depression went away. And, you know, I mean, I've been angry, I've been depressed, I've been, not depressed, I've been angry, I've been frustrated, I've been, you know, annoyed, but never depressed since then. And I think of Starhawk from time to time about how the personal is the political, and about how, you know, it's about action and stuff like that. And so,
when we actually start to get ourselves organized and motivated in doing something, we do feel a lot better. Whether we win or lose, you know, we certainly feel better than, you know, sitting by ourselves hopeless doing nothing. That's for sure. So you started this a year ago. Is that when it started, this creation of Prop 37?
January of 2011, yeah.
Okay. So, all right, so let's just be really clear, because like I said at the opening of the show, you know, the other side is so savvy that they run these commercials that make you really confused, and they make you think good things are really bad things for you. So this is definitely, definitely a thumbs up for 37. We should vote yes on 37.
Yes. And you're, what we're in the middle of right now is a barrage of, they're spending $1 million+ a day to confuse people and, you know, make convince them and talk about everything else besides our right to know and about genetically engineered foods. We are definitely not funded. They have $41 million in their treasure chest. We have about five and need a lot more. We're right in the middle now of, you know, trying to raise $2 million more so that we can have some kind of a presence out there with commercials to counter all the lies and deception that are going on out there. I just saw
someone, probably part of your group, I would assume, or at least he's your ally, on Bill Maher Friday night, right? I think he was also talking about 37.
Yes, that would be Gary Hirschberg, who is the owner of, or the past CEO of Stonyfield. And actually, I'd like to bring on Kat because I actually have to run.
Okay. Kat, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking over for Pam. Introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, how you fit into this, and thank you for taking over for Pam so that listeners can learn more about GMOs.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, and thank you, Pam.
Bye, Pam. Okay.
Bye.
Go ahead, Kat.
Definitely. Pam is an amazing woman, and I am so happy that she launched this effort. I'm a journalist. I've been writing about food and sustainability for the past 10 years. I've written for National Geographic's Green Guide and everything from Better Homes and Gardens to I actually had a magazine that went out to the organic movement throughout the world. And so I've written about food for a long time, and I was compelled to get really involved with this. And I actually bought a VW van, and I got it wrapped in the Prop 37 logo. And I'm living out of it until the election. I've been living out of it for 2 months now. And basically, just to raise awareness for this, and it means so much to me because I actually came from Iowa. My family's in Iowa, and they're the ones that are getting all these toxic chemicals dumped on them. And so so this really comes deep to my heart, too.
Well, you know, let's just really sort of start at the beginning. You know, I hate to assume everybody knows what you and I know about this stuff. You know, maybe some people have only just started, you know, hearing the, you know, the whispers of GMOs or genetically modified foods. What is it exactly, and why should we be so afraid of it?
Definitely. You know, a genetically modified organism, or it's actually called, it uses a process called genetic engineering, and it basically inserts foreign specimens into genes. So it can be anything from an insecticide or a virus. They, you know, with certain kinds of corn, they're actually putting an insecticide in there that actually makes an insect's stomach explode, and that's how it kills the insect. And yet they're putting this into our food as well. And there's a company that's basically making most of this, called Monsanto, that is actually the same company that made Agent Orange. They're the same company that made DDT. They're the same company that made PCBs. And all of these things have been linked to horrible, horrible things like cancer. And now they're making these genetically modified seeds that they have got basically throughout the United States now. And it's in up to 80% of our processed foods. So if it's not organic and it's not non-GMO verified, so your Doritos out there, all that kind of stuff, you know, it probably has genetically engineered food in it.
Well, what about when we go to Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or someplace like that? Can we be sure the vegetables that are out there, you know, haven't been genetically modified?
Well, right now there's only four major crops that are in our food. That would be corn, soy, canola, cottonseed oil, anything with cottonseed oil in it. If it's not organic or non-GMO verified, then you're going to want to question that too. You know, sugar beets have been modified too, but they're not out there as much as this other four. And so right now, as far as fresh fruits and vegetables, there is only one that you have to be really cautious of in the produce section. Most of them, as I said, are going to be in the processed food sections, your cornflakes type stuff, your tortilla chips, things like that. But it's also in high fructose corn syrup, so, and that's in so many different things. But in your produce section, there's only one type that's been modified, and we've been boycotting them and such too. Walmart's the only one that's selling it, and it's sweet corn. And it just came out like a month ago or so, and they're the only ones selling it so far that I know of anyway. So if you're shopping at Walmart and you're buying your sweet corn there, just know that right now they're selling GMO sweet corn and they're not labeling it. So
Kat, tell me, what is their justification for this? I mean, how have they convinced the government, aside from money, okay? I mean, what's the science, if there is any, for needing to do this?
Well, that's the fact, is that there really isn't any science for needing to do it, but they're really, really good at talking. They're very good business people, let's just say that much. And they've put together an amazing business strategy. So you're talking about they've led people to believe that it's going to increase yields, it's going to feed the world, and therefore we need to do it. But the fact is that all these things have actually been proven untrue. In a lot of areas in the world where they have actually done this, it's hurt the soil so much with the chemicals that they put on it, and even the things that aren't supposed to require so much chemicals, they become herbicide, or they become, the insects become resistant, and the pests become resistant, and then they end up having to use pesticides, and it becomes this treadmill, and they end up having to buy more and more pesticides. In India, with the cotton, this has actually led to farmer suicides. It's actually become quite an epidemic.
You say farmers are committing suicide because they
have
to put so much chemicals on their food so the bugs don't eat it? Is that what, did I hear you right?
Well, basically, it's linked to the GMO cotton that they're growing over there, and they're having to take out so many loans to buy the GMO seeds, which are up to 8,000 times more expensive than regular seeds. And then on top of that, they're having to buy pesticides, and they're sold the whole idea that their yields are going to be huge and they're going to make so much money. But then what happens after a few years of using these chemicals is they just destroy their land, and they end up not being able to make enough money to pay back their loans.
And let me ask you, when they can't pay back their loans and they lose their farm, some big corporation comes in and buys it?
Well, that's what, you know, has happened in many cases too. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, we could talk about this for hours, but the whole scenario with Monsanto's and the chemical corporations that are doing this, they get the patent on the seed. So every year these farmers have to buy the seed over and over again. So all the traditional methods that we've used since the beginning of agriculture, of seed saving and respecting the seed and you know, honoring the seed as a place of life, they've created seeds that actually terminate so that you can't reuse them. They actually die. And then the ones that they actually can reuse, if they find them on your property, then, yeah, they'll sue you. And they have taken
So are there any human studies that tell us what this genetically modified organisms will do to us? Do they know?
Well, there's no human studies, but there have been some rat studies that came out recently. I don't have the data right in front of me, but basically they were showing that the rats that were exposed to these, that ate the genetically modified foods as well as were exposed to the Roundup, did have much higher rates of cancer and much earlier death rates. And so, I mean, this is one of those things that when you Google it, you'll find all sorts of information. If you go to CaliforniaRightToKnow.org, there's a lot of great information on that, and you can look up the rat study, and that will give you this specific information.
Well, now the FDA, they're supposed to be protecting us from stuff like this, but are they doing any sort of testing? I mean, do they know what's going on, or are they just bought off?
Well, unfortunately, you can't. The FDA is not who you want to trust on this. The former CFO for Monsanto is actually the head of the FDA. And so we got to wonder if there's a few little bits of conflicts of interest there.
Yeah, that's called the fox guard in the hen house.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, right now you've just really got to look into this. And, I mean, I would highly recommend, you know, looking into The World According to Monsanto and some other documentaries that are out there that will really give you a background on this company and their past and how they have infiltrated the U.S. government. And, you know,
Let's think about it like this, and maybe this isn't, you know, maybe this isn't a question that you can answer. I mean, we all know evil Monsanto and DuPont and all of them, but I mean, these people have to eat the food too. You know, I mean, it seems so counterproductive. They're killing themselves while they kill the rest of us.
Well, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if the owners of these companies didn't eat these foods, to be real honest. You know, and I don't know what they use to justify the different things that they do. I'm not quite sure of that. But you know, I mean, the fact is that no matter what they want to believe, we have the right to choose what we want to put in our body. And if there's something that has not been proven safe for health, that has not had any long-term human health studies or studies hardly at all on it, and the studies that have come back have been, you know, not great, you know, on rats and tumors with rats and things like that. It's like we have a right to err on the side of caution if we want and choose if we want to have that or not.
We don't even know how it's affected the nutritional value even.
Exactly. I mean, there's a million questions about it. And that's the reason
commercials to the other side, the corporations, I mean, who's the enemy? Who doesn't want this besides the Monsantos and the DuPonts? I mean, it seems like from the commercials that the grocery stores don't want it. Who is out there fighting against people knowing what they're eating?
Definitely. It's definitely, if you look at it, you can see the stream of money and stream of product all flowing from the people that make the genetically engineered seeds. But basically, I mean, all the companies that use high fructose corn syrup and all these genetically modified foods, they're basically not wanting to have to respond to any sort of market demand, which might say, you know what, if this has got GMOs in it, I don't know if I want to eat it. And so, therefore, you know, they don't want to have to deal with telling us the truth because they don't want us to not buy their product.
Right. So, right now I am in such an ugly place about the lack of transparency in the presidential election, Citizens United, this sort of stuff. I mean, it's like they really just, I've said it in past shows, I feel like corporations want us to be their prey. I mean, that's exactly what I feel like a lot of the time. We are just their prey, whether it's, you know, Wall Street creating these derivatives and, you know, making the economy collapse, or, you know, it's these corporations poisoning us with food, or whether it's the politicians lying to us about what they're going to do or not do when they get into office. I'm really fed up.
No, I hear you. But you know what? This is one thing that we have the control of. The thing that's amazing about this vote and the reason why I'm living out of a VW van is because of the pure fact that this is the first time that the people actually have a chance to vote on something and make it a law and really change our food system. Because if we get this label, then we have the right to choose. And the more people learn about this stuff, then we can actually push this out of the system. And with it, you know, the amazing amount of toxic chemicals that they use with this stuff. And, you know, so you're talking 550 million pounds, additional pounds, on top of even conventional chemical agriculture that has been used on GMOs in the past, like, 10, 15 years at the most. And that's
so,
a lot.
As I understand it, other countries already label, but we don't. Is that right?
Yeah, 61 other countries, almost every other country, Russia, China is even saying, you know what, this stuff's kind of weird, and we don't know that it's safe. We're going to give our consumers a choice.
Wow.
And so,
That's really something, huh, when Russia and China give their people choice and the
India,
United States just treats their people like prey.
Exactly. Well, I like to use the term lab rat or guinea pig, but
that's a good way. But I still feel like prey. I feel like I walk around with a target on my back. You know, I mean, it's like corporations and businesses. So many of them don't have integrity anymore. You know, it's about what they can get away with, and you know how much money they can make, and that's really the only concern they seem to have. And in the process, you know. People get hurt. So these commercials, if people are still hesitant, you know, because the other side makes it sound like this is such an extreme measure that it's going to cost families, I think they're saying $400 or more a year on food. Is that just all junk talk?
Oh, yes. Their side is excellent at propaganda, and they've actually had to take down several of their ads because they were caught red-handed lying. You know, they were just completely caught lying. And so, the big thing is that at each one of these exemptions and each one of, like, the $400 cost, there's a very logical explanation for that. So basically with the cost to consumers, I mean, companies have to change labels all the time. All they're doing is adding a line of ink here, okay? So that's not going to cost them anything. And as far as the $400 amount, that's if they have to reformulate. We're not asking them to reformulate. They can put all the GMOs in there they want to. They just have to label them.
Yeah.
So
what they're really worried about is when once people find out, you know, the junk that they're selling, they're not going to buy it. But, of course, they don't want to say that.
Exactly. So if you look into the studies that they've done, that's what it's based on. You know, it's not based on how much it's going to cost to change labels, because we want them to add it to the label just like they put sodium and when they do added, artificial colorings and all this other kind of stuff that they put in there. It's no different than that.
Right. Well, now, I'm amazed that average people like Pam were able to get this on the ballot. Tell us a little bit about that journey, if you can. I mean, where did she get the funding? I mean, how did she, did she have to get names on petitions? I mean, what was that process like?
Definitely. You know, that's the amazing thing about being part of this is I had to drive away from it, but I was just at a honking wave with all sorts of community members here in California. And I just, you know, it's so heartening to see all these, like, just moms and, you know, elementary school teachers and all these people out there, you know, in the crisp night weather, just, you know, waving and honking and screaming until they lose their voice, you know, to vote yes on Prop 37. I mean, this is a people's movement. And it was started by, you know, the people. It's funded by the people. A lot of the funds are coming from, like, consumer funds and things like that. There's definitely some amazing organic farmers and companies and things like that that are giving up the small margins that they do have to actually put towards this, too, because they stand for transparency. And so
I don't know that term.
Oh, just like, like the Organic Consumers Association. So, like, you're talking about everybody that follows organic throughout the nation has pitched in money and went out there and raised money in their communities and put on little house party fundraisers and things like that. I mean, that's going on all over the place. And
so let me ask you, you know, we see polls for the election. Do we have any idea where you stand on this? I mean, are people understanding that they should be for Prop 37? Do you know if you're winning?
Well, this is the whole thing. We're still ahead, right? But it's neck and neck. It is definitely neck and neck. And it is one of those things where if we don't get everybody out there voting on our side, then we could lose this. And we could lose such a huge opportunity to make a huge difference in our food system, to literally turn the tide. So I really just want to strongly encourage everybody to get out there and not just vote, but also we need phone bankers. We need people to call up and set people straight because we can't afford to do the ads that they're doing. They got $35 million. They got $1 million a day they're spending. we've raised a whole whopping, you know, over 4 million, but you know, we still need another 2 million to even just get the basic ads out there, you know, and we're, it's one of those things that we really have to do this grassroots because we don't have the money.
So,
where does
somebody call if they want to help you, if they want to send money, if they want to help you staff the phone banks?
Of course. All you have to do is go to carighttoknow.org. So that's carighttoknow.org. And there'll be information on there for everything from phone banking to donating to getting out and doing honk and waves. You know, if you go to the events section, then there's all sorts of amazing events that people are putting on. And I urge you to put on one yourself, do a movie screening, you know. You know, there's a lot of people that are doing little mini fundraisers and stuff like that, too. I mean, that's so awesome, and we can use any help that we can get. And even if you, you know, go door to door and ask some of your neighbors for some donations or something. We need to get these ads on the air, and we need to get people really putting some strong phone banking in there. We'll train you so that you know exactly the truth on things too. We, you know, even with these exemptions, you know, it's like people, they see the ad and it says, oh, alcohol is exempt, or they label dog food, but they don't label meat. Well, there's very, very simple, truthful answers to all these different things, and we just got to let people know the truth. And if they know the truth, then they'll start voting for us again.
Well, you know what?
We
probably have about 10 minutes. Why don't you get into that a little bit?
For sure. The exemptions, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the stuff that they're confusing people with, where you said like the dog food and the alcohol and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I'll go through those right now with you. So basically the alcohol, hold on just a second. Okay, so the alcohol one, beer, wine, and liquor. Basically, alcohol is regulated underneath a special set of federal laws anyway, so we can't even touch it. And plus, it doesn't even have an ingredients list anyway. So with cow's milk and meat for human consumption from animals fed GE grains or silage, Article 2, Section 8D of the California Constitution stipulates that ballot initiatives cannot be about multiple subjects. So in other words, with this, you can have anything that's actually genetically modified, but you can't have second-generation GMOs. So in other words, a cow-fed GMOs would be a second-generation GMO product. And
so in other words, it's not affecting your meat and your milk then?
Well, I mean, that's what you would like to think. I mean, the big thing is that no matter what, I mean, whatever the science is, legally, we can only address one thing in a ballot measure. And so the one thing that we address is first-generation GMO products.
So the point is this ballot measure, this 37, really doesn't affect meat and milk. They're lying.
Yeah. And the big thing is, too, is that there's not a genetically engineered cow out there yet either. I mean, GE salmon, if that ever gets passed, which they're trying to pass genetically engineered salmon into our world, which is really frightening, then that would be labeled, you know. But the thing is that legally we can't address anything besides the actual genetically modified food. Does that make sense?
So what are some of the other confusions that they're trying to distort the issue with?
Definitely. Well, so the dog food one, too, again, is so pet food containing genetically engineered crops such as corn or soy would have to be labeled under Prop 37, because of the standard definition of food under the Sherman Act, which was passed by the legislature, actually includes pet food. So that's another reason why, you know, pet food's labeled, but yet a steak might not be, which is one of their big ads that they like to confuse people with.
Right.
And finally,
are the Koch brothers or Karl Rove, are they indirectly fighting this?
The Koch brothers and what?
Karl Rove, you know, all of that PAC money, you know, he's got some corporations. Are they, you know, part of the people that are working against you on this? Do you know?
I'm not really sure. I know that Coca-Cola is definitely fighting against us. They've donated several million to fight this. As I said,
well, because
they
of so much the fructose,
exactly,
the corn syrup and the sodas.
Yep, exactly. So so they don't want to have to put that they have genetically modified ingredients in there. And, you know, whether they want to or not, they should. So
right, exactly. So now, there's when Pam sent me some information about all of this, there was something in there that said the FDA scientists believed that at the very least this sort of stuff could cause allergies or, just toxic. So the FDA must know something about this.
Yeah, we don't know exactly what they know, but I'm sure that they do know stuff about this. But it's amazing how many things you can ignore when your summer house is being paid off by some lobbying money. So it's one of those things where we have to educate ourselves. And that's the thing that we need labeling for, is because if we get labeling out there, then people can educate themselves and make the decision of whether or not they want to put this in their body and whether or not they want to support this type of agriculture, which does use these chemicals and dumps all these chemicals on farmer lands and watersheds throughout the Midwest and everywhere else. I mean, this is more than just a food choice vote. This is a food justice vote. This is about our right to know. This is about our right to choose which kind of system we want to buy into. This is about the fact that they actually patent a lot of, you know, each one of these genetically modified seeds is patented. So this company not only is selling these products to us and that haven't been tested for human health, they actually own the patent on it too. So, you know, do we really want the same company that made all this other horrible stuff, you know, Agent Orange, DDT, to own the patent on most of our food? I mean, that's a question that I think we need to really consider.
Yeah, I mean, it's unthinkable, really, when you think about it. It seems like to me, you know, maybe this is a crazy thought, but if we go down that road, it almost feels like there could be terrorism in the food supply if we're eating genetically modified food. Something could really go wrong if beyond just the fact that, you know, intentional harm, I guess is what I'm saying. I mean, does that sound too paranoid?
No, it's interesting because there's so many things I'd love to get into on this, and it's one of those things where I just say, you know, go out there and watch the documentaries on this stuff, because, I mean, there's definitely different theories on this, and I urge you to look into those and just educate yourselves. I mean, I never want to make the assumption that people are out there doing stuff to harm people, but at the same time, they're not looking out for us either.
Right.
And the big thing is that as women, one of the things that I've always believed and have written about, and several of the people that I call my mentors are leaders of, is that women really are the nurturers of this earth and the people on this earth. We're the ones that look out and make sure that we're not exposing our loved ones and our communities to horrible things that could hurt them. And we make sure that they're nurtured and they're fed and they're loved. And right now, this is a women's movement in a lot of ways. This is about protecting our families. This is about protecting our earth and protecting our right to choose, because that's our right to choose how we want to feed our families is what's at risk right now. And we need to be able to have that right.
Right, absolutely. Well, let me just ask you one final question. What do you feel like would probably be the most shocking things, we would learn if we took the time to look at some of those documentaries?
Well, as I said, I think the Indian farmer suicides is one of the ones that you definitely need to look into. There's a movie called Bitter Seeds. And then there's another one called Seeds of Freedom that Nutiva is actually sponsoring. So if you go to Nutiva's website, you'll see a link to Seeds of Freedom. And that's an excellent movie. They're actually doing some showings of it around different parts of California, at least Northern California, I think. And if you look on the events page, you'll probably see all sorts of different events where people are hosting, like, movie parties and things like that. I would say that what you're going to see, oh, gosh, if I had to just pick a few things, huh? That's hard to do. But I think the Indian farmer suicides is definitely one of them. I think the ties with our government is another one of them. I think just the history of this company and the fact that, you know, we have allowed them to get this far, so deeply entrenched into our community, while other countries aren't. Other countries are not letting them have this free reign. And we just need to really open our eyes and say, you know what? We can't trust the government to look out for us. We need to be able to make the choice for ourselves.
So do you think, I mean, look, you know, you might not be able to answer this question. You know, we're just sort of thinking out loud here. Do you think it's because the United States, you know, just bows at the altar of capitalism so intensely that everything is always about money, above all else? Has anybody said anything about why here in the United States we're so backward when it comes to so many things? I mean, worker rights, look at this stuff with Citizens United, you don't see, you know, women fighting to keep their contraception over in Europe. I mean, I feel like we're in the Stone Age here sometimes, and I thought we were, you know, one of the most advanced countries in the world, but it seems like we're really losing ground.
Yeah, you know, It's interesting. I mean, because we definitely, goodness, that's another hard question to answer. But I definitely think that we have sacrificed certain things that are so important, like the health of our country, for profit. I can say that very clearly. I mean, I think that that's undeniable. And unfortunately, you know, it's us. The consumers, it's us, the communities, that has to stand up for this. And I fully believe it's time for a revolution. It's time for a revolution. It's time to start, you know, demanding change again, because it has been taken over by corporate interest and you know, money, basically. And money, things have to make money to be sustainable. So I'm not against that at all. You know, I mean, making a triple bottom line company that takes care of the planet, the people, and has profit, that's the way to go.
Right.
But right now there's a lot of companies that aren't like that, and there's also a lot of people associated with these companies in our government. So.
Right. Well, Kat, I want to thank you for filling in tonight for Pam. And as we close this important subject, let's just remind listeners again, definitely vote yes on Proposition 37. We want to know what we're being fed. We want to know what we're eating. We want to be able to make the choice. And it's, you know, and don't believe the commercials that it's going to cost you more money and blah, 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 blah. It's just more corporate lies. And the website, California Right to Know, carighttoknow.org. So in closing, Kat, anything else you want to make sure listeners hear before we say goodnight to you?
Yeah, just remember that this is neck and neck, you guys. There's no guarantee that this, you know, even though people think, well, of course it's going to win because we all have the right to know. Who wouldn't vote for that? Just remember, we need all your help that we can get. We don't want to let these guys win. This is our chance to claim our food system back. We need to fight like crazy. We need to really get out there and call everybody we know, phone bank, donate some money, even if it's just $10. You know, donate some money. Put it on your Facebook page. Link to it so that people donate from your Facebook page too. And just really just remember that this is not just about passively saying, oh, yes, you know, I think that's a great idea. We need people out there on the front lines. We need people volunteering and calling people because we don't have the money to get out there and get that message on TV quite yet. And so we need your help. We desperately need your help.
So how do we find you on Facebook?
Yeah, you can definitely find California Right to Know on Facebook. And my name is Kat Schuett, so you can always friend me on Facebook if you want. I've also got a Twitter page. But then there's also, you know, I would say the CaliforniaRightToKnow.org is definitely the best place to find all that kind of information. So.
Okay. Kat, thank you so much. Thank you for putting up the good fight for all of us.
Definitely.
And, you know, I know, you know, my listeners out there, they're very conscientious. They care about all of this stuff. I'm sure that they will, you know, they will vote for 37. All right. Thank you so much.
Great.
And, you know, come back. Let us know, you know, how it's all going. If, you know, anything after the election, if we lose, what happens? If we win, what happens? You know, keep us posted, okay?
Of course. Of course. Thank you so much. And if you do have any comments or anything, you can also email me at Kat, K-A-T, at carighttoknow.org.
Okay. Great. Thank you,
Kat.
Thank you
so much for all you
do. Good luck.
Definitely.
You know,
thank
for all
you.
Of us.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good
bye-bye.
One. Bye-bye.
Well, we are crossing the threshold into the just have a few quick announcements before we bring on Al, our next guest, who's going to be talking to us about alchemy. Wisdom circles are forming beginning in January if you're in the LA area, and if you'd like to know more about the circles we're forming to share knowledge, discuss important concepts and ideas, uplift each other's spirits, be the change the world needs, email me. Also, we are forming the Pagan Political Action Circle. Interesting how that came to be. I gave a talk at Pagan Pride Day this past Sunday about reconciling your spirituality and your politics, and the people attending said they wanted more than just to sit behind their computer venting on Facebook. So if you're local in LA or if you want to work with us from afar, the work we plan to do will be in-person stuff, but not all of it. We'll be doing stuff by phone, internet, written word, networking, you know, staffing phone banks, all sorts of things like that. I actually just started a Yahoo group, Pagan Political Action Circle, at Yahoo Groups. .net, I think it is. Hang on, let me look just to get that right. I just formed it before I went on the air. Pagan Political Action Circle at yahoogroups.com. Please go there and join. Again, Pagan Political Action Circle at yahoogroups.com. I'm leading a tour to Turkey in the spring. It's going to be at the end of May, beginning of June 2013, with the incredible scholar James Rietveld, probably the foremost American expert on the goddess Artemis in the United States. The details aren't up on my website yet, but they will be soon, or you can email me to get on a mailing list for those interested in details of the journey. And you know what? This might very well be my last trip to Turkey. I've already been there 3 times. So don't say I'll catch you next time, because there might not be that opportunity. And Turkey is a diamond in the rough of tourist destinations. It's not overrun yet with tourists. It's really untouched. And there's so many sacred sites of goddess, you have to be careful not to stumble over them all. There are sites of Isis, Aphrodite, Artemis, Kubaba, Kabeli, Mary. It's really a glorious destination for spirituality, history, mythology, scholarship, and shopping. Yep, scholarship, spirituality, and shopping. That's the three big S's, not to mention the wonderful food. We're also going to be bringing the travelers that come with us to Whirling Dervish performances. We're going to take time out for Turkish baths. So don't miss this one, really. And it is for women and men. And I want to let you know that our final show of the month is going to be on Tuesday. You know, usually we're on Wednesday or Thursday, but because of Samhain, because of Halloween, we're going to be on Tuesday, October 30th. We have a favorite guest returning. He's David Hillman, author of the new book, Original Sin, Sex, Drugs, and the Church, with some provocative research he's going to share about the long history of pedophilia in the church. It will truly blow your mind. And on that night, we also have Kerr Kuhalen on with us. He's a retired policeman and modern knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, and warrior, discussing chivalry, the warrior archetype, and how we can live in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Nature. Also, in case it's the first time you've heard this, Blog Talk hosts such as myself, we pay out of our pocket to give our guests a platform to teach and share their wisdom and knowledge. So if you want to help me keep the show on the air, there are PayPal buttons on my Goddess Store page on my website at KarenTate.com. You can make a credit card contribution. You can always mail me a check, too. Email me at KarenTate108@ca.rr.com. I'll tell you how to do that. And you know what? Just like Kat said about donating to the Prop 7, 37 effort, any amount, no matter how small, is a help because it all adds up. And I'm very open to a regular like-minded sponsor. Maybe your group or company would like to sponsor the show for a month or two or three. Maybe you have an event coming up you'd like to advertise. Contact me if you're interested in chatting about the possibilities. So, next up, as I said at the top of the show, we have Alfred Sylvester with us. He heard me say on a past show, I believe, that I wished for a time machine so I'd know the truths out there that happened in our ancient past. So he emailed me and told me about his 40 years studying alchemy and his book, The First Mythology. Now, you know, Alfred, you know, he sounds like he's a pretty grounded guy. He joined the Navy, went to the nuclear power school, ended up serving on submarines. He left the Navy after 8 years and worked for Xerox Corp. He was in a power plant for 32 years. But, you know, his hobby was always alchemy. He said his alchemy is different. He studied nature as the old alchemists said to do, while today's chemists do it in a lab. These are his words. I'm quoting him. He says, I also worked with Genesis and the Emerald Tablet, both a creation epic, and they were both a surprise. He believes Genesis has something to do with alchemy, and he's going to tell us about that. He says after several years, he realized he needed a plan because it was such a complicated subject, so he picked up the works of Abraham the Jew and those of Flamel. And after many years, he found a 16-month process that had 7 steps to actually do this alchemy. I don't know if I'm using the right terminology. He said, imagine his surprise when even years after that, he found the process was a duplicate of the life of Osiris. And it took years to perfect the steps. Meanwhile, he found astrology in the process. Also, the Nag Hammadi Library, 1800-year-old buried text with the parables of Jesus. That ties into all of this. He says, Jesus knew everything. He was an alchemist. He was a pagan. And from Al's studies, he said he can explain the Gnostic texts. The lost hidden secret knowledge is alchemy. Anyway, let me welcome Al to the show. Hey, Al.
Hi, Karen.
Well, I want to thank you so much for reaching out to me about this subject. You know, it's kind of a subject I've sort of always been interested in, but quite frankly, it felt so complicated. It felt like there was just so much information out there, but it was hard to sort of separate the wheat from the chaff, you know, to know if you were maybe going down a blind alley and or stuff like that. I would imagine that you found that as well, or was it easier for you?
No. Why do you think that it's taken me 40 years? Alchemy is very hard, and the things you mentioned, I started studying Flamel and Abraham because I had something to compare, and I also, wondering about Genesis and the Emerald Tablet, I used them for the same reasons because I had two things to compare, trying to understand. You know, it was a plan because I spent a couple of years and got nowhere.
Okay. Well, you know what? We're going to start at the beginning because it's a complicated subject, and I want you to talk to me like I'm in kindergarten. You're not going to insult me if I misunderstand something and get it wrong. You have my wholehearted approval to correct me because I want to get this right. Let's start with, what is alchemy? Because for me, I've always either heard that alchemy was turning things into gold or maybe finding immortality. What do you mean when you say alchemy?
Well, all those things that you mentioned are a possibility, and I'm sure that as we go on through the show, I'll explain all those reasons why. But what I've always said is, this is the basis of all the religions on the earth today. It is the basis of Osiris. It also proves that Jesus Christ, everything that he taught really had to do with the ancient Egyptian religion, that he was a pagan. That's all proven when you know the process, and it's all proven by what we call the Nag Hammadi Library. I don't use the Bible so much, but to me, the Bible's been cleaned. The Nag Hammadi Library has been buried for probably 1,700 years. So that information I consider is the truth, and it was buried to protect it because everything was being destroyed at the time by the Christian church.
Okay. God, don't even get me started on the Christian church. I mean, you know, they brought us the Dark Ages, and we still see the religious rites trying to drag us back into the Dark Ages. Tell me, too, who was Abraham the Jew, and who was Flamel? Am I saying it right?
They were both just persons in history. I can't say if it was the same Abraham, because it was just a book that Flamel found, and it had the alchemical process in there, and it was by a guy by the name of Abraham the Jew. Flamel was a Schreiner that collected books and things. He did tax work, stuff like that, but he ended up being an extremely important, wealthy man that built hospitals. He did all kinds of things, so there was some way that he became an extremely important, rich man. And as I told you, I studied his work and Flamel's, or not Flamel, but his work and Abraham's, so that I could compare the two processes. In my book, I explain both those processes, plus another process, probably 20-some different pictorial allegories from other alchemical series. See, each alchemist made a series that we know of. Okay.
Say that again. Your words dropped out a little bit. Repeat that sentence.
All of the different alchemists showed their work in pictures, but it was all in a hidden fashion. They had to do that because if the powers that be at the time knew what they were really showing, because it's all about religion, they probably would have been, you know, burnt at the stake. And I'm not expecting that's the way it was.
Right.
Okay. To say what alchemy is, and I believe that the stone does everything that they say that it did because it became their religion. There had to be a reason for them to change their whole society into a belief system all based on these steps of this process.
Now, there's something in alchemy called the Philosopher's Stone, too, isn't there? I mean, and if I'm remembering that right, what is the Philosopher's Stone?
Okay, the Philosopher's Stone is the end product of this 16-month process. It starts in the Northern Hemisphere in December, and it goes to the following year in April, Easter, okay? The stone is done at that time. It's resurrected. It's where the resurrection came from. If you lived in the Southern Hemisphere, then you would start it in June, depending on where you lived on the planet, is how you run this process. And there were alchemists that lived, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, and that's the way they do it. But it's learning how to use nature, and the reason Genesis is important is I found out that Genesis is really the 6 days are based on days of the moon, and it's the 6 months in each hemisphere, okay?
Okay.
when we start in December, that's the first day, and it's 4 months. I always mention the third day because the third day is when the waters come together and everything supposedly starts to grow. That's springtime in the northern hemisphere. The sixth day, when they say man was made, remember it's a philosophy and they made it into a religion. In the northern hemisphere, pretty much everything's growing. There's food to eat. The garden's finished. So, you know, God could, you know, make man then. What it was all about was why they said to study nature. If you study nature today, everything comes from a seed or a type of seed. Everything grows in a certain fashion. We call this phi. Another name for that is sacred geometry. Sacred geometry is what the Egyptians found, and they found that it's in an egg, it's in a seed, it's in arrangements of seed. It's just everywhere in nature. So they assumed, the way that I understand it, is that the earth was formed the same way. The earth was like a giant egg. The sun was the father. The moon was the mother. This is what you find in the Emerald Tablet when it's discussed there. And that's what it says. The sun is the father. The moon is the mother. The earth is the nurse. So when you make the philosopher's stone, it's always about matter. You're duplicating nature. You're using the steps of Genesis, which is a process. And it's really like the same thing that a farmer would use. You know, there's a time to plant, there's a time to harvest. It's the same way with alchemy. There's, like I said, we start in December. There's different steps that you do that takes you throughout the year. There's a time when the matter is brought back. There's a time when the matter is augmented. There's a time when the matter is further augmented. And all these different steps are the life and times of Osiris. If you remember, Osiris lived and died right at the beginning of the story. Then he was buried. He was resurrected. He was reborn as a babe. Well, he didn't want to live as a man. He wanted to live as a god, so he was further augmented. Then at the end, he joined with Horus, and eventually he became a god. Well, all those things are exactly at the same times of the year. The same way that they're celebrated in Egypt is exactly what I'm doing to the stone at the different times during this process.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it when you know the steps and you know the history of Osiris. No doubt.
Okay. So, all right. So let's simplify a little bit more. So you're actually creating something. What's the end product? I mean, after you go through all of these steps, what is it you've made?
You've made matter that is perfect. And they're not only my words. I could read you out of the Nag Hammadi Library where they talk about man is made out of regular matter, the gods are made out of perfected matter. I could talk to you in the Gospel of Mary Magdalene where Jesus is talking about matter. So what's all the discussion about matter? It's just like compost outside. You know, you can rake a pile of leaves together and you put it someplace and you turn it and you make compost out of it. Well, that's just the first step. There's six more steps after that, and all you do is you keep changing conditions. The times are there by astrological symbols, and when you get to the next step, you know, at that time of the year with that astrological symbol, you change what you're doing to the matter.
Okay, wait a minute. I still need you to further clarify for me what is matter. Are we talking about energy? Or are we talking about a physical thing?
We're talking about just like in Genesis where it says the heaven and the earth were created on the first day. The heaven is the shell of the egg that they thought that the earth was made of. And the earth is the contents of an egg. And I've been working with a chicken egg, but I'm going to have to start working with either a duck egg and a goose egg because that's what they had in ancient Egypt. They didn't really have chickens, and I've been having some problems with that. But even in Massey's book, and if you know Gerald Massey, you may be familiar with him.
No.
Well, he wrote the book on Egypt. There's much more information in his books, thousands of pages of other than, like, Sir Wallace Budge wrote the Book of the Dead and all the Egyptian.
Yeah.
In it, Massey says that you must consider the shell of an egg as heaven. And I only bring that up to, more or less prove to you that what I'm saying, I can, show you that it's in a book.
So you literally, okay, because I'm talking literally here, not metaphorically, and you're doing the same thing, right?
Right.
Okay, so we're talking about a literal egg.
Right.
You start with a literal egg, and it goes through a process. And what is it at the end of the process? You've turned the egg into what?
It turns it into perfected matter that they call the Philosopher's Stone.
Okay, but wait. Okay. That doesn't mean anything to me. What would my eyes see? How did it transform?
You would see a lavender-colored stone that you have to grind up at the very end. And I wanted to say that lavender color is the color of the robe that Jesus always wears. Okay, that's one point. And I'm making it from an egg. I'm sure that you've probably seen Mary Magdalene a lot of times. And she's usually shown with an egg that she's holding.
Uh-huh.
And she's usually shown with a red egg.
Yes.
I know that they have a story about that, but the truth of it is the egg ends up a red color just before it turns to that purple color. And the purple color is when you're actually multiplying the product at the end. That's what it's really about.
So it turns into this lavender product, which you're saying is perfect matter, but what use is it? What do you do with it?
It says that it cures all ills. No matter what's wrong with you, this will cure it, okay? I can read from the Gnostics where Jesus had a bag of powder that he gave his disciples to cure the sick. That's the same powder, okay? All the alchemists used red wine. You know that Jesus also, at the Last Supper, used red wine. Everything about Osiris, like I said, is about this stone. And when you read the Nag Hammadi Library, everything about Jesus is also about this stone. And it doesn't just go from an ape to this powder. It goes through all these steps. First, it's rotted, and it ends up just a little round black ball inside the shell, because while it's rotting, the pressure inside the shell forces all the water out. Then it's just a rotten mass. Then September, becomes a white hard rock that you have to grind up. After that, it's black and white. Then it's orange. Then it's lavender. Then it's red. Then it becomes that purple color.
So we're watching the transformation of the egg as it deteriorates and sort of then becomes something else at the very end.
Right. See, they call this the work of God, and the reason they called it that, it was because you're doing the same thing that they believe God did when he created the earth. We're tied up with this all religiously, because I want to go through the steps, just a couple of them.
Okay.
Because it's very important to you and the feminine and the religion and the understanding and everything that's going on, because you mentioned, a hidden history, information that's been swept under the rug, change the history of a divine feminine. You wonder what's in the vaults of Rome.
Right.
And you're even talking about the pagan roots of Christianity. You don't have to even go to Rome. If you learn these steps, okay, and I explain it very well, you'll see that astrology, like I said, it defines the steps and the times of the year. And the proof of this is what you're doing here in the glow, as they call it. There's word definitions to the constellations, and I didn't even know that, and maybe you don't. But those word definitions have to do with this process. In other words, all the constellations was like a clock in the sky, and they used this clock in the sky just like you've probably heard of, like, the Templars and the Masons. They built their buildings all with alignment.
Yeah, so with the solstices and equinoxes and things.
Right. Well, see, that was how they could tell the time of the year. And the ones that were alchemists did this so that they knew when to change the steps. Okay?
Okay.
That's the reason.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So, and I want to hear the steps. I want to hear all of this. But, you know, forgive me for the temptation of reading the last chapter first. When you end up with this final product, this lavender dust, you know, forgive me because this sounds incredible, but, I mean, have you used it to cure yourself of sickness or anything? I mean, what have you used it for? What has it... You know, what has it accomplished? What has it treated? Or I'm not even sure what words to use.
Okay, this is the one part I'm now trying to work with a school here that's in New York State. You know, I'm in New York State. And that's what they do is work with rotting matter and stuff like that. Because the one thing I can't do is I can't explain what happens because you can't read about it in any book. And what we're doing is we're going to set up a program where they can go through each step, and they have people that can say what's happening to the matter through all these different stages.
You mean like a chemist or somebody?
Right, right. Only these are really good chemists. Because,
mm-hmm.
like I said, you can't read about it. Everybody knows what compost is outside, but nobody knows about taking compost six steps further.
Right.
And the only reason it works is because you have an eggshell that's a mathematical principle inside of a pyramid that's also a mathematical principle.
But where does the pyramid come from?
Well, the Egyptians, by studying nature again, they found, like I told you, everything in nature grows according to a mathematical principle that we call phi, P-H-I.
Yeah.
I don't know how they found that because it's very complicated. But they did. And that's another thing that I can't explain. I just want to briefly bring it up. Some of this stuff is very simplistic, but on the same token, it's very advanced as far as the math. And
right,
you know.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, God, my eyes glaze over when we start to get into math. I'm your typical blonde when it comes like that. So are you saying, Al, that you think this end result, this lavender dust that is the philosopher's stone at the end of this process, I mean, are we thinking that that will cure cancer or give us immortality or, can we actually go there? I mean, I guess I want you to answer that and also, too, I mean, how many times have you put the egg through this process? And, you know, what have you done with the end result? I mean, how has it changed your life? Or what, you know, what would awe us?
Well, I wish that I could awe you. I can tell you this. I've gone through all the steps, the first one, the second one, the third one, a lot of times, you know, because the only way that you can figure out the next step is by trying.
Right.
And I told you it's a 16-month process. Well, when you do something wrong, you have to start again, which means you have to wait to the next December.
Yeah, you're talking about a lot of time could go by. It's a very time-consuming process.
And I can't say what it does yet. The only thing I can say is Egypt built a society on this. The religion was everything. Jesus. Everything that he said had to do with this. All of the alchemists down through the ages, I mean, we are talking about the best people that we had, best educated people, all down through the years, all had this, all said the same thing, you know, like Paracelsus, Pythagoras, Plato, Sir Isaac Newton, Flamel, Abraham the Jew, they all said the same thing. And a lot of them had extreme amounts of money, and a lot of them lived to be, they said, whatever it was that they had, they all lived to be very old men.
So you're thinking that this brought them wealth and long life?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. All right, so where should we go from here? I mean, what's the most logical next step? Is it to tell us about the process, or do we need more backstory to understand the process?
I think it's very important for me to tell you a few things about the process because I know it's going to have a great effect on you, you're probably going to have a hard time believing some of the things I'm going to tell you, but I want to tell you those things now because it's the truth. And if, like I said, when you learn the steps, you have to learn the astrology, and you learn what they did in Egypt during those different holidays, you can figure everything out of the past. Like we mentioned, your time machine.
Mm-hmm.
This will give you that, and I'm not kidding, and I'm not exaggerating. I'm not a big expert, let's say, in talking about the divine feminine, but I know how much she's involved, and that's what I want to talk to you about now.
Okay.
It's like the Nag Hammadi Library. What right do I have talking about that? Well, I can read those texts and explain them, because everything Jesus was saying had to do with the ancient Egyptian religion that has to do with alchemy. But in those texts, they called it the magic of Egypt. In fact, they said that the reason that they put Jesus to death was because he was openly talking about the magic of Egypt, and he shouldn't have been doing that because it was a holy thing.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, what I want to talk to you about is the ninth month. The ninth month has to do with the third day of Genesis. Okay, all summer we've brought the waters together, and we made androgynous matter. Now, I'm sure that you've read somewhere how Adam was an androgynous being.
But go ahead.
Okay. Well, that is because we're using both the sun and the moon during that time. Now, during September, we only use the moon to dry the substance. And we do that under the sign of Virgo the Virgin. The moon and Virgo the Virgin constellation are the two sisters that they talk about. The moon is Isis. This is when Osiris is brought forth again as a newborn babe in the mythology.
Mm-hmm.
This is when they bring the Ankh out, which is a sign of life. And even in Flamel, he said at this stage, where before we called it death, to continue the metaphor, now we call it life. They said they had orgies at the end of September. They said they hung things on hills and high places. All that has to do with the process. Okay, and what you're doing with the matter that's in there, because you're duplicating with what they were doing as a society. But they believed that, you know, this proved God. It was perfect. It did what they said that it did. So they lived it as a way of life. And everything about it is what Jesus was talking about. But I want to talk more about September. This is where the virgin birth came from. It's the only virgin birth. And it was a virgin birth because it was brought forth by the moon, which is the ever-renewing virgin. You may have heard that term.
Mm-hmm.
And it was brought forth under the sign of Virgo the Virgin. They were the two sisters. So this matter established the virgin birth. And there's a lot of other things that has to do with Jesus and John the Baptist, but I just wanted to talk about that virgin birth. This is where it comes from. Now, the religious problem, I can't pinpoint the date when it started to be a problem, but mostly the problem occurred with Jesus and the things that he said about the woman. You might be familiar with a lot of that. In alchemy, from the sun you get spirit. Okay, the sun is understood as gold, perfect, spirit, hot and dry, sulfurous. The moon is considered cool, moisture, mercurius, and soul. So the way that Adam became androgynous was using both lights to make that substance, and he got spirit from the sun, and he got soul from the moon. He was an androgynous being. But what I just recently found out, because this has always been a problem, when you go to the next step, everything that you had from the past is taken away, and you only have now what you gain in that step. Now, because Adam was brought forth by moonlight only, he only had a soul. He didn't have a spirit.
Okay.
Now, you cannot die and go to heaven if you have no spirit. You have to have both a spirit and a soul. So this became original sin. This is where it came from. Are you familiar with Sophie?
Sophie. Are you talking about Sophia?
Right, Sophia, the goddess Sophia.
Yeah.
She brought forth the religion she brought forth without her consort.
Well, to me, Sophia is wisdom, and isn't she also, I think in the Christian context, isn't, I think she's matter or something.
Right. Well, see, that's what I'm telling you. It's all about this process. Every one of those different religions, they all have a piece of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But Egypt is where I found all of it. But the wisdom, as you said, of Sophie, which nobody knows what the wisdom is about the things that I'm telling you. Now, the wisdom of Sophie is she is the female goddess that brought forth without her consort. So that matter, everybody, you know what they said about it, bad, evil, everything about it is wrong. It's because it does not have a spirit. The spirit comes from her consort. Okay? That's where the sin comes from. Everything, the tree of knowledge, the wisdom of Sophie, the three wise men, all that has to do with the same knowledge that I'm trying to explain to you. And I know that there's an awful lot there. And it's
you're trying to give me 40 years and 40 minutes.
Right. I know. It's very hard. That's why I say in my book, if you learn those steps and the constellations that are tied to them, and I give three different, you know, so there won't be a problem understanding it. You can figure out everything in the past. But right now we're talking about Sophie. Sophie brought forth without her consort. Jesus believed, he talks about that. I don't know if you read it in the Nag Hammadi library. He talks quite a bit about it. And he says everything of the woman is death. You know, as long as women have children, there'll be death in the world. And he says to kick the woman and kick the food is a fig tree, because everything is death. The reason everything is death, it was all brought forth by moonlight only in that one step. It only has soul. There's no spirit. If you die, you cannot go to heaven. You're in sin. God will not come to you. Now, let me tell you this. The way that alchemy works, I've got my egg inside of this glass pyramid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Base of it has water, and the base of it is a dark color, and that's warm. So you always have vapors rising and condensing, and it comes down and it's always washing the matter below if it's inside the egg, all right? That's how it works, okay? And that's how I pick up spirit from the sun, and that's how I pick up the essence of soul from the moon through this vapor. It's called, they talk about it as Mercury, the messenger of the gods. Well, how
mm-hmm.
is Mercury? You may have heard that.
Yeah, yeah.
How is Mercury the messenger? Well, Mercury is the messenger because Mercury was a name they gave to the water. The water goes up in the air. It's like a cloud. The sun shines on it or the moon, depending day or night. That condenses, rains, and comes back, and it feeds the earth. Well, that's what I'm doing inside my oven. The water goes up, it condenses, the sunlight shines on it in the daytime, it goes down, and it's always flushing the earth, and it slowly purifies it over the 16 months. But you go through these different steps, and each time you're changing, sometimes it's the sun, sometimes it's the moon, sometimes it's a combination. You know, and believe me, there's a lot of different combinations after you learn them. And that's what causes all these changes. But I wanted you to understand the reason I pick up spirit is because of the vapor circulating in the oven, okay?
Okay.
And I pick up soul because the vapor is circulating in the oven under moonlight, all right?
Okay.
Now let's talk about Jesus and baptism. You're supposed to be baptized outside. You're supposed to use rainwater. I just explained to you why. The water's up in the clouds. The sun shines on it. It absorbs spirit. It rains and comes down, you know, replenishing the earth, taking care of the below. But that's how you become supposedly baptized. In fact, in Matthew's book, back to Matthew again, there were tribes in Africa that he mentioned that would not be baptized unless it was with fresh rainwater. They didn't remember why, but they just knew that that's the way it had to be done.
Right, right.
Okay, now here's the thing that's so funny, all right? You have to be baptized to regain spirit, and you have to should be baptized with rainwater outside because the spirit is coming from the sunlight. And that proves kind of what I've been telling you about spirit from the sun, soul from the... They actually believed that the sun was a male god type and that the moon, I'm sure you're familiar with this, was female goddess. We called her Isis.
That's
the original father, mother, and the earth was the sun. And it's from all the adaptions that the different groups, something happened to this earth. And I'll give you a good example. I've explained to you how we get spirit from the sun. Did you ever hear about the American Indian, how he prays to the great spirit behind the sun?
Not really. I'm not sure what you're referring to, but tell me.
What I'm referring to is the name spirit behind the sun being prayed by an American Indian that's on the other side of the world from Africa or Egypt. Massey points out dozens of coincidences like this. You know, we do this here, they do that there, back and forth, all through his work. There was a one-world religion. Well, let me say that there was, this religion was known all over the world at one time.
And okay, well, yeah, I get that. I mean, because we always wonder why the similarities in places that are, you know, so far apart from one another.
Right. It's like saying, why are there pyramids all over the world?
Exactly.
And how old is it? They're right now presently digging up a pyramid that they determined is at least 25,000 years old over in the middle of Europe someplace. This is very old, and I know that on some of your site where I was reading, they talked about how far back the goddess goes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have artifacts that, well, I mean, the Willendorfs are like 35,000 years old, but if you look at the Acheulean goddess, Some people say that could be 100,000 years old.
Right. See, a lot of this is very, very old. They talk about the Sphinx. My own personal belief is the Egyptians, if you get to know them, which I did because I spent a lot of time studying everything, they never did anything without a reason. The Sphinx sits out there just below the level of the ground, and it's a lion, so on, et cetera. And Anthony West said it best. He says it represents Leo back like 6 or 7,000 B.C., 9,000 years ago, because it was just below the horizon.
Okay. You know, I've always thought that it had a lion's head. I didn't believe that it was this pharaoh's head from the beginning because it's too out of proportion.
Right. Well, see, the thing that really irritates me is they have changed the story about everything because they do not want you to know the past.
Or they might not know themselves.
Well, I don't know if a lot of them do or if it's not true, but I do know, like I told you, that I don't spend a lot of time with the Bible because to me the Bible's been cleaned in the past. And the proof of that is the Nag Hammadi Library, because
mm-hmm.
if you learn all my work in alchemy and the steps, and you read, you can read and understand all that Gnosticism, the secret knowledge, everything, almost every paragraph. You'll know what it is before you're even done reading the paragraph.
Interesting.
And
well, let me just ask you a few things, just to sort of give you a time check for both of us, we probably have about 15 minutes left. What I wonder, Al, is have you ever thought about putting this process on video? I mean, the 16-month process, you know, not time-lapse photography, obviously, but just sort of, you know, videoing the process. Or if you have any students, because I know you have that Yahoo group list, you know, have you ever had any students do this alongside you during the 16-month process? Have you thought about that, or have you done it?
Well, I've got pictures in the back of my book. I call them work pictures. And I show probably every color except for one on those pictures. And the one is very fleeting. It's really interesting. When you rot the egg the right way, there's a rainbow effect. And like I'm telling you, it's about things you can't read about. when I'm done with that step, what you do is you take the black yolk out of the egg and you put it in a clean egg and you add water to it to start that circulating process. That water will turn lime green and it stays that way for 24 hours. Then it turns to a sky blue color, stays that way for 24 hours. Then it turns to a banana yellow color, stays that way for 24 hours. Then it clears up and you work on it all summer with the sun and the moon. And these colors they're fantastic when you see them in the sunlight. And it has to be a fleeting glimpse because if you're not supposed to be shining the sunlight on it, you know, you'll ruin it, which I found out the hard way a lot of times. Like I said, you have to do everything the right way or it's ruined and you have to start again. But it really is a beautiful thing, but you cannot read about it in any book is the problem. My second problem, believe me, Karen, I have tried to talk to a lot of people. They're just not interested because I don't have a PhD after my name. And I know how that sounds, but it's the truth.
Oh, no, believe me. I know that, too. Trust me. I mean, you know, without the PhD, you know, people just don't think you're credible, even though, you know, you certainly can very well be. So
well,
you're preaching to the choir here.
I know what I talk about, but let me tell you this. I started talking to a guy about Gnosticism. Actually, I started talking about my work, and he talks with all the so-called scholars about Gnosticism. Well, they're trying to find out what Gnosticism is based on, and I've sent him several files that he's actually put on his blog where they can read it, because I say, here's what it's based on, and here's all the similarities. Everything's the same. This is what I do in alchemy, and I prove everything. Everything I tell you, Karen, I can show you in a dozen different places, and I mean everything that I say, and I take it right out of the books. I'm not making anything up, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be sure that you understand the virgin birth came from this process, and I can prove that to you. You know, when you understand the different steps and what happened, it came from this process, and I wanted to talk about, to show you how involved it was. I mentioned the three wise men, and I mentioned this because one of the shows of yours that I listened to, they talked about that three-day wobble of the Earth, and they think that's what the three stars in Orion's belt has to do with.
I forgot that show. But go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm not remembering that, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, see, that step from September, the next step is 3 months long, all right? Now, this is where I told you, Osiris is reborn as a babe. Now, he has to be further augmented so that he can become a god. It takes 3 more months using the sun and moon to further augment him. And in alchemy, we have the androgynous matter that makes plain earth, plain Adam, and then we have crowned androgynous matter. That's, you know, a step above. That's what I'm talking about right now. Well, Osiris and Sirius, they're the same thing in the sky, all right? The three wise men point to Sirius when it rises with the sun in December 21st, okay, at that time period.
Mm-hmm.
Those three wise men are because of those 3 months of work pointing to Sirius, Osiris, uniting with the sun, which is Horus, which is what I'm doing with the matter in the oven. That's where this last 7 months is divided into 3 and 4. And I know you have no idea what I'm talking about, but it goes to December. This is when Horus unites with Osiris so that he can become a god. That goes on for 4 months. And it goes on until April, which to us is Easter. Then the stone is done. It's resurrected perfect. See, everything about the stone is the same as Osiris. That's when Osiris becomes a god. That's when Jesus is resurrected as a god. But basically, that's when the matter is finished. Everything is about this matter. The virgin birth is about this matter. Christmas time is about this matter. The resurrection is about this matter. All of it is. And
so, yeah, so I'm starting to get little, you know, obviously I don't understand it fully, but I'm starting to get the idea that the holidays reflect the steps and the process. And a lot of the story or the mythology we have are really metaphor for steps in the process.
Exactly right.
So the steps in this alchemical process sort of, like you're saying, permeate all the religions, permeate all the stories, and we're sort of foolishly believing the stories when the real story is the alchemy hidden beneath the surface.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And
but the only thing I'm still confused about, and obviously, you know, there's a lot to learn to understand the process, and I don't totally understand the virgin birth thing yet, but I'm still, I think the most tantalizing thing for me that I'm still not getting is, you know, what is the benefit? What, you know, what's the, you know, the final result? I mean, what do we get out of it after we've put all of this effort into this for 16 months? I know you've said perfect matter, but you've been doing this for 40 years. How many times have you been able to successfully take it through the process and get the end result, and how did the end result benefit your life? You know, I'm not saying this in a judgmental way, just out of just pure curiosity.
The end result benefited me because it took me like 30-some years to get to that step. I don't know how really I can explain that to you, but let me tell you, it was a long, hard road.
Well, it takes incredible dedication. I mean, I'm amazed, quite frankly. I mean, even sticking with this process for 13 months, I mean, if you were a scientist in a lab and that was your job and you were getting paid to do it every day, you know, that's sort of one thing. But, you know, you're doing this as a hobby. I mean, that's just incredible dedication, because it sounds like this is a lot of work.
Well, it was a lot of work. It took a long time to understand it. And don't think that there weren't a lot of times that I took the books and slung them in my locker, because you just get... But I don't know if it's the brain or if it's somebody from the other side or whatever, because really what would happen to me is I would throw the books away. You know, I do not want to be bothered with this anymore. And it'd be like, maybe it would be 6 months later. I'd be driving, coming home or something, and it'd be like a ticker tape would go across through my mind, and it would be the answer to something, and I'd get the books out, and it would be the right answer. And
yeah, it's like you're being divinely guided. You know, they're trying to inch you along here. But the part I'm still having trouble understanding is, you know, what's the reward at the end? You know, I mean, what do you really have after the 16-month process? I mean, I know you said about these ancient people, you know, ended up with long lives and lots of money. Are you going to tell me you're 100 years old and you're really rich?
Well, I hope to be. How does that sound? that part, I know how it sounds. I can't tell you that part yet, but what I can tell you is Paracelsus, like they say, was the greatest doctor that ever lived. He was an alchemist, all right? Everything we know about Jesus Christ is that he cured the sick. In the Gospel of the 12, they talk about him having a bag of powder. Now, that's not divinity. That's having a medicine. And like I told you, okay, everything that Jesus talked about, baptism, is from this process. The color of his robe is the color of the stone. Mary Magdalene with the egg has to do with this, with making it out of an egg. In September, we have the option of making two stones, a red and a white one, okay? In Egypt, that was their colors, red and white. The three main colors of the stone are black and red and white. There's a black and a red and a white pyramid over there together. Everything is there, all right?
Well, you know, the black, red, and white is Maiden Mother Crone to people. You know, that's what goddess people would recognize as the red, white, and black, too.
Well, that's where this comes from. That's what I'm telling you, is when you learn this process and the steps and what happens at the different times, you'll see it everywhere. It's all around us.
Yeah, I get that. So Al, this is really still sort of a work in progress, I think. I think you're still discovering this. I mean, you haven't totally cracked this yet, but I think you're close. Is that what you're telling me, really?
If I get these people down in the college to listen to me, and I think that I can, it seems to be going in that way, then I can have everything be documented. You know, and they can chemically say, this is what happens, all right?
Yeah.
But the point is, like we just talked about the red, black, white, when you learn the different steps, everything of the past, and I mean everything, all the parables, you know, that Jesus said that nobody can understand, you can explain every one. He even gave the process of the philosopher's stone. I can tell it to you because I've read it a lot of times. He says, when you make the two into one, that's Adam being androgynous, making him into the one.
Mm-hmm.
And it says when you make the upper like the lower. Remember I told you it has to be done in moonlight only?
Right.
Then he says when you take the male and female, that's where you have to further augment. I told you using sun and moon again. Where you make it into one where neither is male or female, he says then you can enter the kingdom of heaven. That's Horus joining with the sun being made into the one. I mean, he actually gave the process of the
process. But what is that a metaphor for? I mean, it's a metaphor for one of the steps in the process, right?
No, it's the whole thing. Because somebody asked him how you get to heaven. And see, because here's the part we haven't talked about yet. Why was Jesus a Christ or a Christos? They actually believe that if you take this matter on a regular basis, then it turns you into a God-man.
So you would eat this. You would ingest this.
Right. You ingest it on a regular basis. From everything I've read, it's very small amounts because it's very powerful. You know, you can take too much and I don't know what it does to you, but you won't, I guess, you know. But they actually believe that it made you a god on earth, a living god.
Interesting.
Crystals.
Are you going to do that? I mean, do you have the courage to try to ingest the stuff and see what happens? Are you going to be sort of your human guinea pig?
Yes, I am.
Wouldn't you?
I mean,
wow.
All these years. But the reason, you know, and I've talked to you in the past about my forum. I have probably 1,000 written pages on the forum just for myself. And it's all about this because that's how much information is out there. And it's like I say, I tell people, I said, listen, my scholarship is in alchemy. That's what I do. I'm not great with the Nag Hammadi library, but I can read anything there and tell you what it applies to. I don't know a lot about astrology, but I can say this constellation, see this sign, this is what it's tied to, this is what you can expect. It was like a big clock in the sky. I can tell you the virgin birth is from this process, and Jesus, of all the people, is the one that really demeans the female probably more than anybody in the past, because you know how she was worshipped in the past. There was no demeaning Isis.
Well, no, but you do see, you know, that Jesus a lot of people say Jesus was maybe the first feminist, you know, that he walked with the women, he didn't see women. It doesn't seem like he saw women as unequal. You know, a lot of women supported his ministry. You know, it was women who saw him supposedly rise from the dead. I think most of us think that it was a distortion of his true beliefs is what the church became. You know, maybe when Paul, I think I always confuse Peter and Paul. I think when Paul got hold of things, he was the one that seemed like he was the misogynist. I don't think it was Jesus who was the misogynist.
Well, the only thing I can say is, like I tell everybody, I said I can read it from the Nag Hammadi library, what Jesus
mm-hmm.
said. Maybe he's not the author of that work, but it's in there in several places and all through.
Well, I don't know about that, and I find that really interesting. I mean, I take you at your word there. Well, Unfortunately, Al, we're starting to run out of time here. So let's we're going to have to sort of wrap this up because the show will actually go off the air in about 5 minutes, and I know we've tried to cover an incredible amount of stuff and a very complicated subject, and you made a wonderful attempt at trying to educate me on this, and I want to thank you for all the stuff you've sent me. I am going to try to make time to look at it, but let's tell listeners how they can reach you and find out about your book, The First Mythology, so that anybody out there that wants to really delve into this and get a better understanding than we were able to get into tonight can actually find you and where you have all of this information.
The thing that I would say is the title of my book is The First Mythology. I have a website for that. And many of the things that we talked about tonight are on that website for free. You can't put the whole book there. There's a lot of things that aren't there. But again, not that I want to repeat myself, but if you learn the process and the things that are tied to the different steps, it probably will take you a little while. You're not going to, but you can go, like a lot of people don't even read the Nag Hammadi Library because they say it doesn't make any sense. Well, it's because it's about the old Egyptian religion that Osiris is based on, and as many people that talk about Jesus and Osiris being twins, more or less, that there's so many similarities, there are. It's exactly the same thing, but nobody ever explained what alchemy really was.
Right.
Yes,
yeah, they're not connecting the dots. They're not looking at it through this lens that you're looking at it through. And I can see from what you've told me, a lot of the stuff that we know about history and mythology, we will see with different eyes if we look at it through this alchemy lens. So this is really interesting stuff. All right, so to find The First Mythology, is the website thefirstmythology.com or what is it, Al? Tell me.
Thefirstmythology.com.
Okay. Well, Al, promise you will get back in touch with me after you've gone through this process with the chemists, and when you have more information, we'll sort of have part two here, okay?
Yeah, that'll be fine. And the reason that I contacted you is because, it is demeaning to the feminine all over the world, and it's really ridiculous when you know what it's about. You know, it's about an egg going through a process, and they believe that it actually proved God. And the more you learn about it, you'll see that there was a big argument in the past about, was this really a sin or not a sin? Sophie's not the only religion that was there. It just so happens that Jesus believed in Sophie, which really probably came from the old Egyptian religion too, and that's the fact that it was brought forth at one time by moonlight only, so it only had soul.
I'd like to put you together with some religious scholars with open minds. That would be, it would be very interesting for you guys to compare notes. I'm going to think on that because I know some scholars with some open minds. Maybe it could benefit your work and their work as well, and we would all get something out of it. So, Al, thank you. I'm sorry to cut you off here, but I'm literally going to go off the air in 2 minutes and 10 seconds. So I need to wrap up the show. But thank you, and we will definitely talk again and revisit this. Let me know when you have more information, and we'll, like I said, come back and do part two. So as we close tonight's show, with the election days away, I just want to say please get out and vote to make sure your politics and your spirituality are in sync. And remember, my dear listeners, find your sacred roar, be an Amazon, a daughter of Sekhmet or Diana, Kali or the Morrigan, because if not us, then who? If not now, then when? Don't let the corporate plutocracy and the fundamentalists rob us of our country and our... Don't buy into the false equivalency that the Democrats and the Republicans are the same. You don't see the Democrats trying to legislate vaginal probes or vote down equal pay for women. You don't see the Democrats saying their claims shouldn't be fact-checked. So, have a wonderful week. I want to thank my guests. I want to thank my listeners. You're all wonderful. And, wow, just have an incredible week and try not to agonize over this election. It's all going to be fine. So good night, listeners. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.